But let's go to the US, because a key vote nears in the Trump impeachment trial on whether Republicans can hold off a push to call witnesses. Today saw one of the president's lawyers also push a view of executive power that has raised eyebrows. Alan Dershowitz argued in the Senate hearings that the president's re-election is in the public interest, so anything he does to stay in power is unimpeachable.
And if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected in the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment.
Well, that argument would put presidents above the law, potentially, so long as they could claim their actions boosted their re-election chances. The House impeachment manager, Democrat Adam Schiff, called it very odd.
What counsel for the president is now saying is it's now okay to criminally conspire with another country to get help in a presidential election, as long as the president believes it would help his campaign and therefore it would help our country. That's now okay.
Well, as the first of several days of senators' questions about the trial wrapped up, I turned to Professor Wendy Schiller. She's an American politics expert and a chair of political science at Brown University. First, for her thoughts on whether there is cause to call witnesses.
Yes, I think that there is a case for calling witnesses, because I think both Republican senators and Democratic senators want to have a better idea of what actually transpired, either in the Oval Office or with conversations that the president had with his key advisors. There are many more Democrats who want to hear about this than Republicans, but there are still a few Republicans who want to make sure that when they vote to acquit the president, which is likely because the bar for conviction is so high, it's 2/3 of the Senate, that they want to know that if they vote to acquit, that they've had all the information that they should have to make that kind of decision.
Now, all of the votes so far in this process have been very much down party lines, which means the Republican majority has won out. But Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, Republican, reportedly told his side that they don't have the numbers at this point to stop the calling of witnesses. So who's wavering and why?
Well, it's a combination of wavering senators who are from states that have more independent voters than other senators. So, for example, we have a state, Maine. It's a small state in New England. And Susan Collins is the incumbent Republican, and she is considered to be vulnerable to a challenge by a woman who's in the Maine House of Representatives. And we have another senator from Arizona who's a very big Trump supporter, Martha McSally, but she seems to be vulnerable in that state as well. Cory Gardner of Colorado is vulnerable. And a guy named Tom Tillis from North Carolina is vulnerable. And they're incumbent senators. And the problem for them is they need the Trump base to win re-election, absolutely. But they also need a slice of independent voters in order to be able to win the election when they run in November 2020 for the Senate. And they don't quite have those independent voters. And they just don't know how much those voters will care about the impeachment process and about hearing witnesses. So if they vote against calling witnesses, that could come back to haunt them in their election, raised by their opponent. But if they call witnesses, the Trump base that they absolutely need may defect from them, decide not to support them, stay home, for example. So it's a very difficult calculation for those four senators to make. The problem is that the majority of Republican Senate is a majority of four votes. So if all those senators lose in November, the Senate goes back to the Democrats.
The definition of a rock and a hard place, I think it's fair to say, for those four at least. The upset this week has been the release of some of the details from a draft of a book by former National Security Advisor John Bolton about his time in the Trump administration. Why is his information considered so explosive, as we understand the book to outline, and so important to Democrats prosecuting the impeachment case?
Well, there's two reasons. One is that he was a national security advisor for the president of the United States, so he had many conversations with the president about foreign policy and national security. Typically, we expect those conversations to be confidential and under executive privilege, which entitles the president to speak to his staff and not reveal the contents of that conversation. So it's a very tricky question as to whether, in fact, he should be able to testify about conversations he had with the president without the president's permission. So that's a constitutional question about presidential powers. But John Bolton is also known to be a very staunch hawk on defense policy and a very staunch Republican, quite loyal to the Republican Party. So that he's willing to say this about the president, that he's willing to testify on this, it means that he really believes that the president crossed the line, that the president went beyond his powers. And it's striking to have a longtime loyal Republican who served the president really be willing to go out in public and swear under oath that this is what happened. So it's both a political problem for the Republicans, but it's also a substantive problem for the Democrats, because it may be the case that Trump makes the argument successfully that this is a violation of executive privilege and that John Bolton shouldn't be able to reveal these conversations in public while Trump is still president.
Now, one of Donald Trump's lawyers, Alan Dershowitz, today argued that anything the president does to stay in power is unimpeachable as long as it's not a crime. I guess two questions about that. First, is that your reading of what might constitute an impeachable offense?
Well, no. If you read the United States Constitution, it mentions impeachment. It basically gives the House the power to impeach, which is like an indictment, accuse somebody of a crime that would remove them from office. And I use the word crime. That is not a legal definition of crime set down by, you know, law. That is a definition of high crimes and misdemeanors against the nation. So it's an abuse of power, bribery, extortion, selling out the country to a foreign power. These were explicitly stated in conversation in the founding period. They talked about this. They had scandals about this. There's no question that this is what they were worried about. It's not the same as a court of law. It looks like it, because then the Senate actually hears the evidence and votes to acquit or convict. But in this case, conviction doesn't send you to jail. It ousts you from office. So it's really hard to fathom any reading of the U.S. Constitution that supports Mr. Dershowitz's claims.
I guess the second question that arises from Mr. Dershowitz's claim is, isn't it tantamount to endorsing a candidate lying and cheating to get elected?
Well, I don't think that's really an issue for the American public or even for the founders of the country. I think they expected people to do a lot of things to get elected, including lying. But cheating is one thing. Selling out your country or foreign policy, or, you know, extorting a foreign leader to get dirt on your opponent is actually compromising the national interest. And if that is the act, that is something that going against the national interest for. It's not just to win elections sort of domestically. It's putting the national interest on the line at stake just to win election. And I think that, I don't think anybody would agree that that's within bounds when we think about what people can do to get reelected. So just as Richard Nixon said, who had to resign before he was actually impeached, he said, well, if the president does it, it's not against the law. That's actually not true. That's not been the interpretation of our laws and our systems of government. And I think that Trump supporters may sort of accept that. But I think generally speaking, nobody's quite comfortable with the notion that the president can do whatever he wants as long as it helps his reelection, particularly when it comes to the national interest.
Now, of course, this has been hyper-partisan. That has been the theme of American politics for so long, particularly under Donald Trump. But regardless of the outcome of the impeachment trial, what does it mean for Trump's re-election prospects in November, in your view? He is favoured to win despite all of this disruption, global disruption as well as domestic, and lurching crises. What does it mean for his prospects?
Well, right now, I don't think it means much of anything. In January of an election year, if you go all the way back to President Truman, which is a long time ago, more than 60 years ago, there's no relationship between your approval rating in January of an election year and whether you win or lose. So lots of things happen intervening, including selecting the opposite party nominee. The question is, does Donald Trump do something like this again? I mean, not really. Impeachment by itself, I don't think matters. But if he is acquitted, which we expect him to be acquitted, and he then does something else now, not even though we learn about something else that he's done in the past, but if he does something again and again that really flies in the face of this proceeding, I think that could ultimately turn off those very same independent voters, those suburban Republican voters who put him in 2016, who finally say, we've had enough, we don't want him anymore. They may not vote for the Democrats, but Donald Trump needs them to get out the vote. He won by barely fewer than 100,000 votes last time. considerably so, and out of 138 million votes cast. It's extraordinarily tight, razor-thin margin, and he cannot afford to lose any of those people. So that's the big question mark. Does it really, you know, sink into him that he should not do this again, or does he do it again repeatedly and risk alienating those voters who he actually still needs to win re-election?
Wendy Schiller, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Wendy Schiller is Chair of Political Science at Brown University.